A Wiggly World 111. All ones.
It's never straight up and down.
It's never straight up and down. It's never straight up and down. It's never straight up and down. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Wanna live in a wiggly world. Wanna live in a wiggly world. 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 Wiggly world.
A wiggly world. A wiggly world. Welcome, everybody, to the ninth edition of this episode of A Wiggly World. Honestly, I think this is about the... It might even be a dozen. It might be a baker's dozen. No one knows. I've restarted this episode a few times. So I apologize in advance if my mind is not completely here. My willingness to do this show, my zeal, if you will, my intention is high and all with it. However, my brain is not cooperating today. I'm still recovering. So I still haven't gotten caught up from the 22-hour work fest of last Thursday to release the We Talk Games episode 6. I'm still not caught up with that. That was a 6 in the morning work day. I began about the same time working on Thursday till 6 a.m. work on Friday. That was a lot of work. I did my tech job in the morning, which was stressful, and then really delved into the editing of the We Talk Game 6, which ended up being a four-hour show. So you can imagine trying to edit something that's 4 hours long. It takes quite a while. It doesn't take 4 hours to edit that. I've also had a very challenging tech work week. My job has been completely challenging this past week, so my noodles aren't all what they should be today, so please take that in consideration. But I had to get an episode out today, although it's getting quite late on a Friday. And by the way, free, are you ready for some free balling? Free balling Fridays are here again. I'm just going to open a mic and go. I do have a few topics I want to touch on, and the reason for the show today is because who can deny this public outcry? There are three thumbs up. I'm staring right at them on my Facebook, right under Larry Wilson's post for requesting a new Wiggly World podcast, and on the Wiggly World message boards, hugely successful, almost 100 members. I'm so embarrassed to be me at this time, but what a great community. I mean, I wouldn't trade those 100 for anybody. It's just, it's sad, you know, when you put it all out there and that's not enough. I don't have any more. This is all I got, everybody. My music, my artwork, these audio programs, the video work I do for Chikara and for my own things. I mean, this is the highest I could think. I can't think it any higher. This is it. This is all for me. So if this isn't cutting it, I don't have any more. I might as well go in a shoe repair or something like that. But two people posted that they wanted a new Wiggly World for their Saturday trip. So who can deny that type of global, worldwide, public outcry for a new episode of A Wiggly World? And who will be my 600th friend on Facebook? Will it be you? I doubt it, because you're probably already listening to the show. It'll probably be like the 60% of my Facebook friends, people that talk crap about me on other Chikara websites, and they just friend me because I help get the word of Chikara out there, but yet on message boards they will say, he is a dork and I hate him and want him to die alone. Well, that won't happen. But everyone dies alone. We come in this world naked, broke, and alone, and that's how we'll go out. On that pleasantness, let's delve right in. There's also other reasons for the show. Number one, you may have noticed my worldwide global tour of public debating of theology. Of course, debating on a 17-year-old's Facebook status thread, the existence of God and theology. Poor Paul was getting hammered. Paul from, of course, Teens Wiggly. Teens Wiggly, which will undergo a name change. Hopefully that will give a boost in right now. This is the type of world I live in, friends. Teens Wiggly Facebook, 22 people, 22 members of Teens Wiggly. It's you know, I'm a loser. Let's face it, I'm a loser baby. So why don't you kill you and send some other people in my direction that may give a hoot and not pollute. Free Ballin' Fridays. You never know where we're going to end up today. Also, I'm trying to keep it three-year-old friendly. I got to keep that in mind. So, like I said, I tried to start the show, but my brain is just crazy. You know, you have to relax into these things. When you are confronted with a stressful situation or a potentially stressful situation or even something as innocent as a podcast heard by millions, you sometimes need to just relax into it. Not much can come out of, and you can have adrenaline going. Oh, you can have the adrenaline going. But that doesn't mean you can't relax into that and let the adrenaline do its stuff as well. Not many times where stressing yourself into a situation will give you a good result. Not many instances of that. Mostly if you just relax into it, you'll do okay. And I just did relax. But not relax enough. So I did the triple S's down in the basement, the poop, shower, and shave. And I didn't take a luxurious shower. I did what is it now? Oh, boy. Oh, TPCNC, the teats. I think you could say tits in the UK, so I'll say that. Tits, pits, crotch, and crack. Crack and crotch. Ah, I blew it. I'm not even sure if that's how you say it, but that's how I say it. Tits, pits, crack, and crotch. Crotch! My favorite wrestler. That's the only thing I miss about Smart Wrestling Fan is I don't get to talk about crotch anymore. Another reason for today's show is, of course, to re-examine the focus of a Wiggly World. I think it gets lost a little bit when, you know, in the States here, we have to deal with extremists trying to put things into our school systems, into our legislation that were never meant to be part of them. So we have to deal with that, and sometimes I think some of our questions come off as just, as one of my detractors once put it, Wiggly versus religion, as if that could ever happen or result in anything. It's far from that. This show is about asking questions, and that's about it. And on this show, I believe the questions are far, far more outweigh in importance the answers. And of course, I also want to talk about the bits that you may have missed if you weren't one of the seven people that tuned into More Off the Record, my impromptu Wiggly Town Hall that happened this past, I think, Thursday. I'm not sure. I'm not positive on that. And, you know, all the revelations that brought about my new venture. I'd also like to answer the question, is Zen just saying the opposite of what most people say? Hopefully we'll touch on all that, and Joseph Campbell as well. On today's episode of Wiggly World, that's a synopsis. That's my outline. That's what I hope to hit on. Who knows if we'll ever achieve that on the Free Ball on Fridays that it brings. What? Yeah. Well, let's start where my money is. A venture that I started not to rake in the cash. Unfortunately, I couldn't stop that money-making juggernaut, though. Right now, I am what they consider a money-making machine. Since the inception of my ringtone venture, in the past 3 days that they have been available, I have already accumulated $2.08. You cannot stop me. I am rolling in a room full of quarters, literally 6 feet high. No, that is not happening. $2.08. This shows you how utterly prolific and successful I have been in all of my ventures. But what is it all about? Let's back up. Let's start from A and get to Z, hopefully. As I mentioned before, We Talk Games number 6 came out on, they it dropped to this earth on this past Friday. Last week ago today. And in there, there is a new device that was implemented in the hopes to expedite the show. It ended up being a four-hour show. So that shows you how well that worked. It was from the connectivity wizards at RITeam, which is, of course, Rosenstein's Information Technologies and Enriched Elbow Macaronis. That company created, LLC, by the way, that company created the Magic Suck 2012, as it is known. It's not the Magic Suck 2000, which, of course, it is the 2012, which is much better than the 2000. And it's this little red button that I press, and it automatically connects me to all of our callers in the queue, so I don't have to talk to my sound engineer, Keith, and tell him to connect me. I just press a button, and whammo, it connects me. I'm instantly connected, and we get going. And there's a unique jingle that takes three times as long as Keith actually connecting me. And this jingle, I thought, you know, this jingle's kind of interesting, kind of catchy. I think people would really enjoy this as a ringtone. So that started the ball rolling as to investigating ringtones. And one of the most requested pieces of media that I create is the Chikara themes for the Chikara Pro Wrestling that I'm involved with. I, of course, if you don't know this, a lot of people only listen to A Weekly World. I also found out a lot of people new to We Talk Games have only heard of We Talk Games since the Volume 2 started. And next year, of course, we'll have Volume 3. But it'll always be called We Talk Games. That is a title that I'm quite proud of and will always maintain. But as I get sidetracked here, people constantly request the Chikara themes. Where can I download that? How can I download? And this is the number one request from people, even on the YouTube, the people that just stumble upon our videos, first timers that either, you know, stumble upon it by some type of metric, I guess, either a word search for something, this or that or the other. And they always write so eloquently, "What's the song? 10 minute, what's the song?" And then I, of course, would type Chikara theme 2009. "No, what's the name of the song in the beginning?" they would type back. And I've learned to anticipate that second question. So now I write Chikara theme 2009. I wrote the song. I write each year's song exclusively for use on the Chikara podcast of Go-Go's. So now I write a long explanation of that. It's not yet in the cut and paste form, but that is, like I said, once again, you know, where can I get it is then the follow-up question. And you can't get it legally. It's not available. So, of course, as you know, I've been working on an album for the past probably 2 years. And by work on it, I mean I think about actually sitting down and doing something with it. And as I mentioned on previous versions of A Wiggly World, I did start. I have one song completely done, and I extended that by a whopping 10 seconds. I need to work on approximately 16 to 20 songs and make them all 3 minutes long. These are songs that are anywhere from 30 seconds to only a minute and 15 at the longest, and I have to extend them to full-fledged songs. So that's going to take a lot of time and a lot of work, and I am slowly working on that. But what I realized was that, you know what, I know I don't have time right now to sit down and work on a full Chikara album, but I do have time to take a few of these songs, Chikara theme 2008, Chikara theme 2009, and different iterations of the song that I already have completed, and whittle them down to 40-second versions. And this is what I did, and I can release them as a ringtone. So now people can get the song that they want. It's, you know, basically has many of the same elements of the full song. And yet, even if I release them now, that helps satiate. I don't think they'll get sick of them because I haven't gotten sick of them yet as my ringtones. And then hopefully they'll buy the album when it comes out later down the road. So that was my thinking of creating ringtones specifically targeting the Chikara podcast themes. Since then, I've had a lot of people request, you know, trapdoor songs and others. Though I don't have any trapdoor songs ready to go to 30, 40 seconds long. They just don't exist in that format. All of those trapdoor songs are pretty much on analog tape, except like for Tremel. Or the remixes, the trance tributes. Those are all digital. Those I could break apart into segments and create little 30-second bits. For existing trapdoor songs that may have been requested, you're going to have to get the fade out. There's just no other way I could creatively go about to make those shorter songs fade out, or maybe I'll try to do a little bit of remixes. They should at least be, they are the same tempo throughout the entire song. So that is something I can try to edit, but that's going to take a little bit of time. And right now, I, of course, don't have that time. Why did I go with the delivery medium I chose, the company I chose, that I went through a lot of long deliberation on that. In fact, I changed it at the 11th hour, the delivery method, the company. I went with Mixer.com, and now I can honestly say, if you text trapdoor to Mixer, M-X-Y-E-R, on your cell phone, you will get my library, a listing in my library. And I settled on the price, 99 cents for ringtones and 49 cents for wallpapers. And they're all available. If you go to mixer.com/trapdoor, you can see everything that I have available now. I also have available some funny bits and one of the most other requested bits from Magic Milkshake Machine and Smart Wrestling Fan and things like that. And believe me, more are in the works. But considering how successful this has been already, like I said, $2.08 in 3 days, you know, I have to warrant what is important to me as far as how my time goes. I mean, I waste a lot of time doing a Wiggly World. It doesn't fill my pockets with cash, but there's something else I get out of doing a Wiggly World. I get to talk, and people get things out of it, and they respond to me with email or statuses on Facebook and things like that. And you know, that's the payment for that. That's the payoff. This ringtones, although I'd love to share my music with everybody, I already do share my music with people on the iTunes and on other downloadable sites, and of course CD Baby and things like this. So, you know, there has to be a balance, and that is something that I struggle with constantly. And my scales have yet to tip back. In a significant way, I have to enjoy the dance while I'm dancing if I want to maintain my constant balance. Seek contentment, so to say. And once again, all of this you can find out about everything I'm involved with at wigglesworld.com. I recommend checking back there pretty much on a weekly basis, because I do try to update at least something on there every week, and there's always a little new thing I'm trying, this or that, or links here or there, changing descriptions and pictures and whatnot. I'm also excited our new We Talk Games Pro Gear version 2 and 3 are halfway done. The white is on the shirts already, and we're just waiting for the second color to be added, probably next Tuesday, hopefully. So hey, don't put off ordering your pro gear. These things are really designed and released to help support that show. I never ask for donations on We Talk Games, as far as I can remember. And that is how that show will remain. That show is strictly to talk about video games and little else. Not a lot about personal things, especially not a lot about donations or how the show survives. But all of my products, at some point, I receive bills for the web domains, the domain names, and I'm constantly paying these, you know, on a monthly basis. So any type of support to these shows is, of course, always appreciated. And one of the ways that we thought about to try to generate some money for We Talk Games is through the sale of T-shirts. So we're providing a high-quality Pro Gear line, and that's how we hope to make some loot there. And that's why I did the ringtones as well. I thought, you know what? Here's a way that it's relatively inexpensive. It appears on your monthly, your statement at the end of the month. And that was another thing. When I considered these ringtone providers, these people, these places that you can, that help artists and stuff like that, I wanted to make sure there was no monthly charge for or you didn't have to join anything. If you want something, you just text that number. Like, if you want song 10, you text trapdoor 10 to Mixer, you know, on your mobile phone, and then it asks you to pay for it, and that shows up in your bill the next month, and that's it. Doesn't recur, nothing like that. So that was very important in consideration, and also very important least important was how much profit I make out of there, unfortunately. But I wanted it to be a good, a positive experience for the customer, and that's why I went with Mixer. But on a Pro Gear line, you know, these are just little things that we hope will snowball. We hope this will keep going. We hope that we can keep doing these shows. I love doing We Talk Games. But as you can imagine now, with such a diverse guests and guests that require, you know, a certain amount of special attention, that is a big chunk out of my normal work week schedule. These shows take a lot of time to put together now in their current form, and that's fine. It's very good. I could do this a lot easier than I can get together with a group of people locally and set aside, you know, long amounts of time to do one thing. This gets spread out throughout the weeks, and that's good. But by the same token, as you can imagine, they are getting more and more complex, and that's fine. It's good. I love it. And right now, everything's fine. Everything's good. But that also reminds me, I need to do more paying off for the artwork on these shirts for the original version with TT and Stinky. That I have to start laying down some more tracks for Legion of Rockstars, because that was supposed to be my payment for that. And if I want to reapproach for any more drawings, I definitely have to get that payment going. I think I did about four or five songs already. I need to get some more under my belt. But enough self-deprecation. And what would a Wiggly World be without self-deprecation? Who would I be without it? That's for sure. But let's do one of the tenets, one of the main staples of a Wiggly World, which is concentrating on things we do want and not on concentrating on things we don't want. Because why waste your time just going over and over and over things that you don't really care about in your life, things that aren't, because this is it, you know, this is the dance, let us dance, let's begin. And now we'll talk about something that probably Paul doesn't really want in his life. Paul, of course, on his Facebook, the one of the people behind Teens Wiggly, as I mentioned before, wrote as his status on Facebook, "So, in my moments of study and search for a spiritually balanced religion based on human action rather than magic tricks and hocus pocus, Theravada Buddhism is the only religion that makes sense." So, he's looking for something. He thinks he found it. That's perfect. End it there. Great. No one can give you a hard time about that. That's for darn sure. Well, unfortunately, he does go on to say, "I'm not forcing my beliefs." Now, that's, you know, right away we're getting in trouble. "I'm not forcing my beliefs, but look it up. I especially like the contemporary Western aspects, but the truth is that the population won't accept my beliefs." Oh, why start off a negative on this, on a negative foot here? What? How do? Don't second guess anyone. Number one. Number two. Now comes the fighting words. "Religious freaks saying they are warriors of Christ. Think about it." No matter how true those statements are, you have left yourself open, Paul, to what you received. And I'm sad to say that the theist responses to this are unfortunately absolutely no new arguments here. These are the same old arguments that, I mean, these are arguments that you read in a pamphlet. It's unfortunate that we don't go beyond that. Let us now try to go beyond that. You try to go a little bit beyond that, to try to go a little bit into a more theological approach to this. And, you know, we don't even really need any sort of theological background to delve a little bit deeper into some of the hard time that you receive for this. But, Paul, you really open yourself up to a hard time with these trailing comments, these commentaries. Because you had a good thing here. You had a very good thing here. Listen, I looked into this Theravada Buddhism. I like it. Check it out for yourself. Find out what it's about so I don't have to explain it to you. That's all very good. But then going on about the warriors of Christ and religious freaks, no matter how true it might be, that is a blow struck right there. Now, I don't know what prompted that. Now, maybe there's a reason that you needed to write that. And it, to me, it's also unfortunate that, you know, that Emily and J-Ro, as I'm not really personal enough to say that, as Jessica points out, unfortunately, they're I think, are probably two of your closest people, and they gave you left-handed slaps there as well. Those wouldn't sting as much. The ones that come from the other fellas, their arguments are pretty thin. I really wouldn't hang much on those. Those are easy to just bounce right off because they're just full of things that would come from, I think, that demographic. I certainly would have said those same type of things when I was, you know, around that age group, 16, 18. And I also have to be very careful about what I say because, you know, I am a 43-year-old man. And speaking about people that are considered minors in the United States of America is, I'm sure there's some type of, if there's not some type of written law, there's definitely a creepy law. So I have to be careful about what I say and how I approach this. And I appreciate you know, asking me to just, you know, take a look at this, maybe talk about this on a Wiggly World and things like that. So here I am. And I definitely appreciate you trying to, you know, share my thoughts and ideas with the world as well. It's quite a compliment. So in the interest of not getting into the creep zone, in not sweating something that people with limited access and experience of deeper study would say to you and things like that, and I don't want to insult anybody. I don't know anybody here. What I would rather do is just consider some questions, and you know that is really what A Wiggly World is all about. I think because of the fact that we live in the United States of America, and that I live in the United States of America, I should say, and I am constantly bombarded each and every day by not only the word Jesus at least four times a day. That's one of the studies out there. You hear that at least four times a day. Some of the topics that come up on in the Wiggly's World of Media message boards has been the topic of discussing exposing children to doctorates, you know, religious doctorates, forcing them what else are you really doing? But, you know, encouraging them to say prayers before meals and things like this. And just the culture we live in. Listen, this is the culture we live in. But I think it's very, very important to separate the reason for myth from the doctrine of myth. And something that I posed long ago, in fact, speaking of Facebook, a question I posed on my Facebook when I initially first opened my account, Facebook had this thing where you could create a question. It wasn't like a poll, but it was a question. You know, how do you like pizza? And people could say yes or no or whatever, and they could write their comments. Well, my first question, of course, was what is the difference between religion and myth? Because my whole purpose, despite what some of my detractors might have said, and they accuse me of, and I don't know if I mentioned this before because I had to restart this show so many times, but some of my detractors made the flipping comments of, you know, each Wiggly World show is Wiggly versus religion, as if that is even possible as a battle of some sort. I would lose immediately. And you know, Paul, you picked a Theravada Buddhism has 100 million people that practice this, and I don't. There's not many forms of Buddhism I classify as religions. And what is the difference between religion and myth? Here we go with that. So I don't consider it a religion. It definitely has a mythology to it. It definitely has mythos. It definitely has stories and things like this. But to me, a religion involves faith. And to me, if it revolves around faith and religion, there is nothing but blind faith. Because show me one proof of God that God exists. There is absolutely none. Now, of course, someone that is of a theist may say, well, look around you and see the world. And, of course, when I look around me and see the world, I see anything but any evidence of an all-powerful deity. There just simply is none. In fact, if we did live in a world of an all-natural deity, it would be a much more magical world, not bound by any of the physical laws that we experience, not bound by time, not bound by anything. In fact, I would have to say that if we lived in a land that, in a world, in an environment that was nothing but created and the product of and everything else, I would have to say that I wouldn't have to say that anything, because it would just be, it would exist beyond any type of vibration I could create to convey some type of message. There would be no message. And I don't want to jump too far ahead in my thoughts here. I think I have ideas that will formulate themselves later, but I sort of want to just further extrapolate on the purpose of a wiggly world. My question posed, and really, a wiggly world is about questions. And as I mentioned before, to me, knowing what questions to ask are far more important than the answers you might get. Very often, the questions I have posed to me as a non-theist, or you know, whatever moniker, and I picked the term non-theist, not to go on a segue too far here. I picked the term non-theist because there's never a point where God ever has to come into this picture. If it wasn't for early man feeling guilty for killing animals and wanting to give thanks to those animals, and then later, as time progresses, we evolve to a big daddy in the sky, and hey, the gods are just like us of the early Sumerian times. And once again, the Sumerians gave us many of the myths and the stories that we later heard about. Aten and Pishtim, of course, long predated Noah. And of course, he was a Noah, except that he was in more of a submersible vessel, and he carried the seeds of the animals. He didn't bother trying to fit all these livestock. You know, stories that made a lot more sense. They're Buddhism, Hinduism, the religion of the Aboriginal Australians far predate any type of written gospels and things like this. And even the products of the gospels at the time, right now we say, a lot of this doesn't make sense, it doesn't line up, it contradicts itself, it is the stories and the myths of a desert people with weird customs. If a woman gives birth to a daughter, she has to take goats and turtle doves to the priest's door every year for so many years, and it's worse if it's a girl. If it's a boy, then not as much, and all this other stuff. Now, you might not think that exists, but if you read your Bible, you will find that it does. The bride price, the bride price. I mean, this is the reason that people can, it says a man shall not lay with another man, because you can't charge for that. You need a bride price, and a virgin gets a lot more than someone that is not a virgin, and this is all property laws. This is why we have anti-homosexuality things, and these are topics I delve into at great length in other episodes of Wiggly World. I don't want to delve into that right now, but these myths and things like this, getting back to my whole purpose, what is the difference between mythology and religion? And I had a lot of people answer on my Facebook. The most common answer is that people are not willing to die and kill others for a myth. And that is true. That is true. You don't hear a lot of people say, I'm blowing myself up. All hail Aphrodite and Zeus and things like this. You don't hear a lot of that. And I don't know what that was, a non-distinct accent. I was just doing a voice. I wasn't trying to implicate anybody. But we don't have a lot of warriors for Zeus out there still to this day. Now, why is that? Is that because religion doesn't have crazy claims that we find in mythology? Is it more outrageous that a man tried to create wings to fly and he made them out of wax and he flew too close to the sun and he melted and he died, he perished? Is that outrageous? Is that more outrageous than a bearded man in a turban flying up to heaven on a winged horse? Or another bearded man from the desert that went up to heaven on a cloud, as Jesus did, or a man that went up to heaven with God? He didn't have to use any type of cloud or horse. He just went up there and God showed him where he kept all the raindrops, right next to the stars, the sun, the moon, and the snowflakes. Yeah, he keeps them all. So that's more outrageous? No, these are all outrageous myths. There's nothing to separate them. Is it because you don't get life lessons from myths? That is insane. That is the purpose of a myth. The myth does two things. It explains the environment and the world that the myth maker is living in at that current time. And it is usually there to teach some sort of life lesson, some sort of reflection of and reaction to the current environment. And as soon as we remove that analogy, as soon as we remove, as Rationalize put it to me so many, many years ago in early episodes of Wiggly World and posting on the message board, and by all means, this is something that many, many people, even people that uphold the Bible as the Word of God and as a great book and are Christians of some sort, you know, the 21,000 sects of Christianity or whatever crazy thing it is, 2,100, I should say, that this is analogy, this is metaphor. As soon as you remove the metaphor from these works, any works of myth, then you have trouble. Then you have people blowing themselves up. Then you have people, you know, saying, oh, you know, this is the unchangeable word, or this is the word of God, you must follow it to a T. Well, let me tell you, if you went and picked up a stick on a Saturday, then we need to stone you to death. If you want to follow this Bible as your infallible word of God, and I'm not just picking on Christianity, believe me, it's just that Christianity is what I face on a daily basis with people trying to infuse the commandments, and as they call them, the Ten Commandments, which is incredibly erroneous right there, into public policy, into law, into our schoolrooms. Hey, I have no problem teaching comparative religion courses in our school systems. But why do we need to do that? We already have a mythology classes in most of our public school systems. It should just be another part of that. Now, perhaps that is far too cruel and whatever you want to say about it. But as I say, 0.0 tolerance. When I hear God tell me, as all of us should hear simultaneously, and all-powerful, all-everywhere God should be able to tell us all simultaneously, teach my word in the public schools. 0.0 tolerance. When I hear it from God's mouth, from his lips, or whatever, he doesn't even need lips. That would be silly. And once again, anthropomorphizing an infinite being is just silly. But 0.0 tolerance. You have an outrageous, incredible, far-out claim that is not, does not present itself in our natural world as you look around you, then you need to have the proof of that. That's it. So let us talk about the omnipotent God. Let us talk about the all-everywhere God. And we don't need a lot of theology. We don't need any theology. We don't need any Bible study to do this. When we consider that God is an omniscient, omnipotent, and omnibenevolent, which means all good and all good being, then we look at life. We look at life on earth. Life on earth is nothing but constant killing to live. We kill living things so that we can continue to live. There is yet a foodstuff that I know of that exists where we do not have to kill to live. We kill plants, we kill animals, and that's how it has always been. It has always been a prey-predator animal kingdom, and it has always been a kingdom where one living thing must die so that another living thing may take its energy and convert it to some other type of energy. And depending on how far down the line you want to go with energies, I mean, we can get silly and consider life to be, you know, anything, a vibration or whatever. But this type of killing to live, and, you know, you can argue that, okay, plants, they live, yes, but they don't have emotions like we know. They don't know they're dying. They don't know they're being killed. Animals definitely know that there are suffering animals out there, suffering animals that suffer from natural disasters that have not committed original sin. They have not fallen. They have done nothing to consider this fall. And this whole fall business I've gone into on previous episodes of A Wiggly World is just ridiculous. It is as if I am to hold you responsible for the transgressions, the crimes of, say, someone that is maybe of your same ethnicity. What control did you have over your ethnicity? During the Wiggly World Town Hall meeting this last, more off the record, as it was, as I called it, we had Youngdens in there. Youngdens was in there, and this fella, this moron, I don't even remember what his name was, this goofball. He was in there and he was goofing and he would just say some weird things, and I knew that this kid was going to be trouble. I knew that he wasn't familiar to me. He was probably never heard of my show or any of my shows or anything, just tuned in because of who knows why, because I was live. And he was doing goofy things and he kept holding up his driver's license and saying, staring contest. And anyone that gives one word anything's on a chat box or something, some little bit of red flags go up, and especially if they're just out of nowhere weirdnesses. And of course, it didn't take him very long to say some type of ethnic slur, racial slur. And Youngden was like, what did I do to deserve, you know, racism? And that's it. That's the point. No one does anything to deserve racism. That's why it's racism. If you did something to deserve it, then it wouldn't be racism. Then it would be, you know, an argument or whatever. It wouldn't be, unless they said some type of ethnic slur. But in that ethnic slur, there lies racism. You don't do anything to deserve racism. You no more could move the sun than you can have any control over your two parents, whatever ethnicity they are. They liked each other, they screwed, and there you are. You are probably, you don't have control over that. You don't have control over your name. That's why I like to take back my name. I take control of my name. My parents didn't even know me, and they named me, you know? They didn't know me, they didn't know who I was. I was a baby. I couldn't tell them anything. I didn't even know anything. So, you know, I'm all about taking the name that you enjoy, and this, we see this in other types of religions and in Hinduism and things like this, taking on other names, being reborn, and this whole the whole very, very common mythological stories of rebirth, being born again. These are nothing new, you know. These are nothing new. These have existed for all time. Death and rebirth, very common threads. The forbidden thing. There's a list of even hero stories. There's a list of hero checklist, if you will. And I I don't want to take the time to look it up right now. I think I've talked about this on previous episodes of A Wiggly World. And, you know, many people around the time, 2,000 years ago, many people fell into these, even living people, real people, not just people of mythologies or people that you cannot prove, people that were verified by multiple sources, multiple peoples, multiple cultures, like people like Caesar. Caesar, you know, was considered to be born of a virgin and things like this. So this was not uncommon. Alexander the Great, born of a virgin, heavenly signs, people trying to kill him as an infant. You know, same thing that happened to Moses, same thing that were later breathed into the Jesus story. These are all retellings of hero stories and things like this and myths. And what does that have to do with racism? What does that have to do with anything? I don't know. Hopefully on a playback, it makes a lot more sense than these shoots, these branches I get put off on. But Joseph Campbell was a very, very refreshing find. And his PBS series, The Power of Myth, is something I recommend to anyone that has a Netflix on the Xbox or however. Check out The Power of Myth. Now, some of these episodes are 40 minutes. I guess they were put into an hour-long show, 40-some minutes. And some of it's very dry, okay? This isn't going to be exciting, pulse-pounding, Christopher Hitchens, you know, extremist, other way bashing type of thing. This is going to be militant, myth, atheist or whatever type of talk. This is going to be an exploration of mythology, and it's amazing. I've only been briefly exposed to this guy for only like the past 2 or 3 days, and already he is, as far as impact, he is right up on the scale. I put him right next to Alan Watts and Buckminster Fuller as far as people that I consider to be very impactful on perception, on my perception, and the way I look at the world. So, that being said, now, are there a lot of things that I disagree with him on? Not really, but subtly, yes. You might hear him say some things that you say, that is not what Wiggly talks about, and things like this, and that's very true. But when I read more into, when I take it easy, when I take a step back, when I apply a broader floodlight on this, I do understand what he's saying, and I am more in line with those thoughts. I just may use different terminology to agree with the same thing. But very, very good stuff. Great stories. He can really suggest some things to you to shoot you off in looking into other myths and other stories and things like this. Now, speaking back on the Bible, and the Bible, of course, being the inspired word of God, or the direct word of God. Now, God never wrote anything. Jesus never wrote anything. This may seem obvious to some people, and not so obvious to others. People never even question this. They think, who wrote the Bible? Oh, Jesus, his disciples. Well, not only didn't his disciples write it, but, you know, Jesus never wrote anything. And any cursory look into biblical matters, into biblical study, you know, these are some of the well-established, well-known things for many, many, many years, that Jesus never wrote anything. Also, the Bible of the Old Testament, if you read him, his name is Jealous. He is a very vengeful God. There are a lot of comments on this post about, you know, well, if you go against God's will, then you're going to be punished. Now, I'm not going to punk out, you know, some kid for saying this. That was questioned in the time of Jesus, in Jesus' day. These things were questioned. The Gospel of Thomas, which of course was not voted on by the Council of Nicaea and other councils onto what to include as books of the Bible. The Gospel of Thomas tells a much different Jesus story. It's a more mythical, electronic Jesus, sort of just, he's just an electrical charge. He's a power word. You say his name, you can heal by saying his name. He's like a hocus pocus, abracadabra type of word. The Gnostic Gospels question the hell out of the Bible of the Old Testament. They thought he was they cast him as the villain. The serpent was the one that wanted to give people the knowledge to understand the differences between good and evil. They wanted to share with people. The serpent is more of the hero. The God of the Bible is this vengeful demigod that was tasked by the overlord God. And, you know, another person in here mentions that, no, the Jews were monotheistic. No, they were polytheistic in the beginning. There are like five transitive, there are five verbs, plural verbs. The Elohim and Adonai are two plural nouns. There are three plural pronouns, or six different times the three plural pronouns are used in the Old Testament. We, us, and are. When God is referring to himself, there's one plural adjective, and there are five plural verbs when God refers to himself. So this was a plural, and this is what people use. This is what Trinitarians use to try to prove that God was in three as one, and all this other business. But this language changes as the Bible progresses and it becomes more monotheistic. These are borrowed popular stories from around the time. And once again, we're losing track of the message here. We're losing track of the message, and we're trying to push it as some type of historical, as history. Now, we even know that history can be, of course, mostly fiction as well, because it's all subjective by the historian. But this is trying to get too attached to and losing sight of the message and the reason for these things, and getting hung up on the words. And this is something Joseph Campbell pushes a lot of, and I can't. He eloquently summarizes it, and I can't. It's on the tip of my brain, but I can't create a path to it. And while we're on the topic of Bible, what a dated form of communication that God always used. Number one, he never just spoke to everyone simultaneously. He always had to be like in a bush or through an angel. Always had to send a middleman, stuff like this here. Oh, because if you look at God, he'd be blind you. What? Wait a minute, he's all powerful. Couldn't he make it so you got sunglasses or something? And he doesn't even need, these modes of communication. That's what's so ridiculous about this all. I mean, really, people honestly are saying, look, read the Bible. You mean that now people, honestly, that live in today's age, Bluetooth and Twitter and Facebook status and a beer can that tells you when it's cold enough and all these other forms of instant communication, global communications and all this, really, you're honestly going to tell me to read a book? Good crazy. Holy Muhammad on a winged horse flying up to heaven. Insanity to think that a God that is everything and everywhere needs some goof mouthpiece, a prophet. An omnipotent God needs no prophets. To think that they need some goofball mouthpiece or a rule book to allow itself or its purpose to be known is absurd. It is an absurd premise. Argument over. Your argument is moot.
Oh, but that's only in the Old Testament when Jesus came and he did away with all sin because he was the ultimate sacrifice.
It's because God loved burnt animals. He loved the smell of burnt offerings. That's a quote. that's not a shoot. That's not a work. That's an actual quote. God loves the smell of burnt offerings. It pleased him. God spends many, 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 multiple chapters explaining how to decorate doilies and everything in his little temple that you could go in there to talk to him. How to build it, how many cubits, what type of wood, what type of cloth, all this other business about how to go in there so that, and what type of sacrifices to leave him. The human sacrifice was just the natural evolution of the ultimate sacrifice to make, to do away with these traditions and these nonsensical animal slaughter and everything else. It was just, you know, the people were becoming more too sophisticated for that type of business. So they said, well, you know, we'll do the ultimate sacrifice. This is just pure conjecture based on evidence, okay? This is a hypothesis that I am saying, that I'm projecting now, based on evidence of things that were popular at that time and how it may have progressed and been pooed upon. Now, this is not proof. I get this from nowhere except my own conjecture. But here we go. We give the ultimate sacrifice. That's one of the reasons for it. Listen, there's plenty of reasons for the Jesus story. And each author of the Bible tells a slightly different Jesus story because they want to get across their views of things and how life should be and whatnot. So one of the reasons that we get the ultimate, the human sacrifice, and it had to be the perfect human. Couldn't just be, you know, this virgin or whatever. It had to be the perfect human. And then later, of course, the big gift to God, and maybe he is God himself and all this other business. So I think this show is so scrambled brained. I'm considering, I'm wondering if I should even release it. Hopefully you just take that in consideration. But the Jesus of that day went to the mountains with the three temptations, this is a recurring theme as well, three temptations of the subject of the myth, of the hero. And Jesus is taken up on a high mountain. Now this mountain that is, you know, mentioned here, from this mountain, you can see the entire world, okay? You can see the entire world. Now, you know, I know, everyone knows how absurd that is, number one. Number two, he's taken up and shown this entire world. Now, this, he can see all the different people, all the corners of the world. And so, if he could see all these people, why aren't the Aztec ever mentioned in the Bible? Why aren't the Chinese ever mentioned in the Bible? Why are only the people from around that Middle Eastern area mentioned? And of course, you know, that's right on the top of Africa there. So we get you know, a lot of those local. This God and this religion was a very local tribal religion, and it resonated on many levels and in many ways for many reasons, and that is why it has become popular. And one of the reasons it has also become popular is because people lost touch of the reason for the myth and became attached to the word of the myth. So you really have to look into the Bible for what it is missing. I can go through, you know, you can just look around your house and discover what is missing from the Bible. It is not written for our time. It is written for a time where the best that Jesus could do would be coming back riding on a horse with a sword. That's the best that he could do. Another guy rides with a bow and arrow. Another guy rides with pestilence. But they're all on horseback. And that reminds me of the book of Revelations. Here's John writing the book of Revelations 100, 200 years A.D., perhaps. And here he is talking all about the giant monsters, all these, you know, old hero stories. It's still influencing his time of writing with his visions of these giant monsters. These are all ancient myths of that's how the earth came about, you know, a big fight, Tiamat, all this business. And here it's still influencing the giant monster scenarios and things like that. It's still influencing John, which is much, much later. So, you know, it's not surprising. Not surprising that that people would write this. This was very, very, very common in their culture there. Let's talk about belief. And, you know, many people on here, once again, on Paul's thread, the same old arguments, unfortunately, arguments that we go through time and time again, and very easily answered, but probably one of the most disgusting things I think that I see in here, and I want to get on to beliefs, is stating that, you know, it broke down to, well, God's law. You have a choice. You have free, you could either choose to obey God's law or suffer sin. That is being a good God. And this is ridiculous, number one, because, once again, we're not talking about an all-good God here. You cannot have an existence of evil. Well, then we would just be robots. No, we would not just be robots. You can have a world where everything, all the choices you make are good. All the choices that you make would only result in more good things happening, and still have freedom to choose whatever you want to do. That is something that an all-powerful God could do. He could make a world like that. In the Bible, God says, "Do I not create the dumb, the deaf, and the retarded?" You know, he says that he creates these evil things. There's plenty of theological students and theologians wasting hundreds and hundreds of man hours trying to show how the devil could come about, because the devil isn't a person that has free will. The angels, that and the free will isn't a, that's not what, where does it say that? It doesn't say that. You know, the original Satan, if you want to say it, which just means adversary, the original Satan type of character, the devil type of character, was put in there as a sort of double agent for God. He went in, whenever God decided he wanted to test out his people to see, you know, if they're really going to worship him or not. Once again, a ridiculous place for an all-powerful God to get himself into, having to test Job and all this other business. He would send this adversary that later became the Satan enemy character, because people wanted to try to figure out, well, listen, there's all this evil and pestilence and everything else that happens to innocent babies and innocent people that you know, didn't do anything wrong. How are we going to explain this? I know, we need to have an enemy for God. And that's how the Satan character evolved. But in the beginning, he was just this like double agent type of angel that would just, he was doing God's work to go and try to tempt people to do bad, so that when they didn't do it, God could say, oh, I'm glad that you didn't do that. I'm glad you really didn't kill your son, even though I told you to do it for me and all this other business. Okay, listen, read, learn, then get back to me. But and I'm not mad at anybody. But these arguments are just disgusting in the fact that they say, well, you do bad and then you're going to pay for it. No, that is not how our earth, this world, and this life work. The innocent suffer more, you could say, than those guilty. Is it the fact that, you know, everyone that commits a crime gets caught and goes to jail? No. You probably commit plenty of crimes, things that we consider crimes, on a daily basis. And even things that are written in this ancient old 2,000-year-old frickin' sand book, you probably break those laws constantly. You probably have talked back to your parents, well, then we should stone you. You probably have eaten shellfish, well, then we should stone you. You probably have worn polyester, then we should stone you. These are all the commandments of God. You should not do these things. Do not work on my Sabbath day. You will be killed if you do. Look at the guy that picked up sticks. He went out to try to just gather some sticks for his family. God struck him down dead with lightning. Don't work on God's Sabbath. If you want to live by this book as a law, then you are breaking the law constantly. And there's no way to not do it in today's modern world unless you go and be Amish or something. And even then you're going to be breaking it, because there's going to be people around you that are doing the same thing. You have to go live in some type of vacuum that doesn't exist. Because if you read the laws that are in these books, it is absurd. They are absurd. And you cannot physically, possibly, maintain all of these crazy, ludicrous laws. They might have been good ideas at the time. They might have gotten, you know, because how are you going to pay the priest anyway? How's he going to eat? He's going to need some sacrifices. So, you know, it worked for a time. But the bride price, all this other business, you're not doing this. Don't get on here and give people a hard time about it unless you know what the hell you're talking about and what you're reading. And there's no age limit on my venom and my anger towards that type of ignorance. We live in a world where the innocent suffer. This law that you're talking about here, about, you know, go against his will and you will go to hell, and that is a terrible punishment for the most evil of gods. And that's another thing that the Gnostics had a problem with. If you don't know who the Gnostics are, then you should look into that. Because these are people that are right around that time. They're not 2,000 years later, you know, people trying to piece together this, that, and the other. These were people that were around those same times, within, 200 years of this malarkey. And then he goes on to mention, and I don't see how believing in heaven is materialistic. Heaven, the streets are paved with gold. God sits on a golden throne. Gold, I tell you, with rubies and all different other precious things all adorning it and all this other business. Gold, I tell you, gold from the earth. And God created the earth in 7 days. Well, 6 days, and he rests on seven. What days? That is using the time of earth time. This was written by people on earth. He did not do any such thing. And because this giant universe, and he's going to go by Earth time, okay? Not only that, but then people get around it. They say, no, listen. 1,000 of our years is one day to God. That really means 6,000 years it took him. That's why these young Earth creationists think that the Earth is only 7,000 years old and stuff like that. And of course, the end times happen in the 7,000th year, which isn't happening. That's beside the point, because the Earth has been here for a billion years. And the reason I think it is 4.55 billion years old is based on evidence, not based on no evidence whatsoever of a 6,000-year-old Earth. Now I get too sidetracked, but... once again, so what, 10,000 years? No, it's Earth year. You're still using Earth time, okay? You're still using Earth time. How do we measure time on our Earth? How do we measure days? How do we measure years? Measure a day by the time it takes our Earth to rotate once around its axis. We measure years. 1 year is equal to time it takes the Earth to orbit entirely around the sun. The Bible says that God created the giant radiating light of the day. He called that the sun. And then the giant radiating light of the night, the moon. The moon is a dead rock, okay? It does not emanate light. It refracts light. He also says that the author of the Bible also, which if you think it's God, then God doesn't know that the sun is just another star, because he creates stars on a different day than he creates the sun. And then he specifies that, the sun is not like the stars. And he creates this when he does create the stars. Let me get it right here, because I don't want to just be angry and yelling out this poop. Lights at a firmament in heaven. He separates day. You know, I dwell on this. I talk about this quite a lot. So, yeah, he makes the sun and the moon, to give us light. And then he makes the stars as well. Those other things that are not like the sun. And probably more like the moon, because they're just tiny little dots. How could they be like anything else? But how could heaven be materialistic? Well, when you think that, and I'm speaking generally, broadly, and if you were a Christian or not a Christian or whatever, first of all, you have to realize that the Old Testament, no one believed in heaven. No one believed that when you died, you were going to go to heaven. That there's no concept of heaven back then. And as a matter of fact, there's really not much talk about any people going to heaven at all in the Bible, except for maybe three people, and that's it. Not all of us are going to go to heaven, and that's nowhere in the Bible. These are later ideas that were blown in from Greek mythology and everything else. Now, when you think of heaven, what do you think? What do you think of? You think most people, most Christians, I would think of a very materialistic world. They think of a place just like here, except that you're going to lay down with a lamb, and you're going to be under a tree, and you're going to be happy, and you're pretty much going to just be doing the same stuff you're doing here, except you're not going to have to work. I don't know how much more materialistic that could be, but definitely the descriptions of heaven in the Bible are completely material. They're more material. They're all about wealth and the paved streets of gold and all this other business. That's right from the Bible. That's incredibly materialistic. So that answers that, I think, or raises more questions, whichever. I'm completely happy with that. Let's talk about belief, though. You may say, well, you know, I believe this because I believe it, and it must be true because so many people believe it. Well, 100 million people believe in Theravada Buddhism. So what? So 2 billion people believe in Christianity, 2 billion people believe in Islam. People of any religion believe in their belief in what they believe. Of course they do. You know, of course they do. How deep was the belief of those that carved giant wooden totems, our Native Americans here? That how deep was the belief of the people that built the pyramids, that created all the grand and intricate tributes to the gods throughout the ages? Did they just have a little faith? Did they think, this might be true, that's why I'm wasting all my time, years and years and years and years and hundreds of years building these giant temples and tributes to the gods? 320 years ago, in the United States, people had ultimate, unwavering faith that some people were witches. Do we still now believe that there are ladies that fly about on broom handles? Do you think that people fly around on brooms? That's a serious question. Are you laughing? Let me tell you, people 320 years ago sure did. They believed so deeply that it was truth that they murdered those that they believed guilty of witchery. How deep does your faith have to be willing to take someone's life? Were these people just like a little sure that witchery was evil and the work of the, because it says in the Bible that, thou shalt not allow a witch to live. So we have to kill the witches. And I really believe that they're witches. They're causing diseases. Now, this might seem absurd to you or ridiculous or, oh, those are just primitive people. These aren't primitive people. These are people just like you. How are you different from someone that believes a person can fly around on a broomstick? I just want to know. I just want to know. For me, Theravada Buddhism is still too much doctrine for my taste. I don't really care for anything as structured. But it, you know, it's definitely nothing that you're going to go strap bombs to yourself and you know, take literally and things like this. And it does impart a lot of great, I'm a big fan, of course, of Zen Buddhism and things like this and the things that Alan Watts talks about. But I generally like the things that are a lot more demystified and I just basically like to read mythology. And I like to read nonfiction. I like to read stories about cultures. And I like to take whatever I can from anything that gives good advice. Does the Bible have any good advice? Yeah, there's a couple of peaches in there. I also like to read the stories, and I think they're fascinating. But I surely know, and the things that we talk about a lot on the Wiggly World, and the reason that we examine these is because the society that we live in now is aghast because there's a robot that has antenna nipples on my shirt. It's a robot. and this is a point of taboo or something. This is like, oh, a robot with nipples and a butt. You know, this is a problem with people. We live in an age that is shocking to some people, and yet the Bible is full of innocents being slaughtered, women being raped, and not just one woman, hordes of women. The just and the right men, the man that God would not destroy. The story of Lot. The two angels come to visit Lot and tell him that Sodom and Gomorrah is all sinning and you got to be destroyed, but you're a righteous man, you're a good man. And the mob is outside of Lot's door and they're like, give us an angel, we want to rape them. And Lot is like quick thinking. He goes, no, take my virgin daughter instead. This is a much better idea. This is in the Bible, okay? He's supposed to be the most just man of ever. And then later, afterwards, when Lot's two daughters both take turns one day after the other, getting Lot drunk, having sex with him and conceiving children by Lot, date raping their incest with their father, date rape, one after another, which is a conspiracy. This is in the Bible, my friends. That's why I spend time talking about this, because I find it incredibly amusing. But the main focus is, of course, has always been, right from the outset when I first started talking about it, was trying to figure out what the difference between mythology and religion is. And there is no difference except the length that people will go to for religions, where they definitely would not do that for myth. And that is purely a personal one and nothing to do with the actual facts of what is written in these mythological books. I don't know the author of this statement, but it definitely is fitting here. An evil person will do evil acts, a good person will commit good acts, but only religion can make a good person commit evil acts. And I think that no truer statement can be stated. That's why it's called that. Once again, operating just as a huge brain fart at this moment, but I'm trying to keep it clean for the 3-year-olds that might be listening. Why do I like Zen? Hey, you know what? I not only like Zen, I happen to have written, I wrote a book on Zen. In fact, I can honestly say that I am the only person in history to have ever written the ultimate book on Zen. And if you don't believe me, it's $10.95. Just go to cafepress.com/Wiggly's World and click on Majin Sutra. Majin Sutra, Master Wiggly, the ultimate book of Zen. $10.95, it can be yours. It is in the spirit of Lao Tzu, no doubt about it. The embodiment of the Tao, the Majin Sutra, Master Wiggly, captures the true Tao with an empty book of nothing. Honestly, this is a book of nothing. It took me a while to write this. There's an introduction. There's a back cover with quotations. There's even an ISBN number. I have my own barcode. And there's an introduction to this book. Then the rest is all entirely 51 blank pages. But that is... Zen Buddhism is really about laughing. Is about a joke. It is about an incredible observation. It is about whatever you ask me, I'm going to give you the answer back to you as the same question and maybe the opposite to whatever you asked. But that isn't really it, because as in the writing of Lao Tzu, the true Tao, and this is probably the same it's definitely the same for like the Hindu god ideas of gods and the Buddhist ideas of God and things like this. Really, the true Tao cannot be explained. Look, it cannot be seen. Listen, it cannot be heard. Grasp it cannot be held. So the whole thrust of this book is definitely the ultimate book of Zen. I could think Zen no higher, Zen Buddhism no higher than this. And that is why I took the time to make the front cover, the photos, the back cover, the color schemes, everything about it, to make the ultimate book of Zen I could. Now, another sad news, a sad day for television. Brink aired its last episode last Monday. Brink, probably one of the best shows on television right now, and a weekly show, a weekly science show. I mean, where else will we get things like Brink on television? I don't know of any place. But Josh Zepp's final thoughts on that episode were fantastic. True, sad but true words. Because I can think of no other television show right now that so could inspire our imaginations for a future, and also that is a weekly, and is also exactly what we should be dedicating our time towards things like the subjects brought up that used to be brought up on Brink. So it's a sad day for cable television, but kudos to Josh for keeping it real at the end there and calling out the boobs of television as they are, and unfortunately what does succeed in today's world and what does not. Listen, I have a lot of your letters. I have a lot of things that I still need to get to. I promise a more coherent, cohesive show next time. But for now, this is the show that came out. I know I haven't been very coherent this episode. I hope that it was okay. I'm still going to release it, although it's against my better judgment. But, you know, I have to look at it this way. At times, you know, it's going to change all the time. If I want to put something out, it has to go by my current abilities. And sometimes there might be a good show, and sometimes there might not be a good show. Definitely my ideas are all there. And you have two ways to look at this. Joseph Campbell, I think, is a very eloquent speaker. Definitely everything that I've ever heard from Alan Watts has been incredibly intelligible, entertaining, and informative. But every time that I've seen Buckminster Fuller in an interview, it was mostly towards his later years, and he spoke faster, he thought faster than he could speak. So Campbell is Campbell, Watts is Watts, Bucky is Bucky, and I am Wiggly, and that's really all I could be. And I thank you all for joining me today for an episode of this episode of Wiggly World. I'm going to leave you today with one of my ringtones. It's only fitting. Don't forget, Mixer.com, Mixer.com/trapdoor. I'm gonna leave you with, I don't know. I'm looking around. I only have 5 songs available and 2 sound effects. I'm going to leave you with the Chikara theme 2008, the 40-second version. So you could either go to Mixer.com/trapdoor and help support the work of Wiggly Eye. Your 30 cents will go a long way, believe me. Or you can just grab it from the end of here and rip me off. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks for being part of a Wiggly World. A Wiggly World.